The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Weekly Connect. This is the show that's for you if you're blind or partially sighted. I'm Stephen Scott, your host this hour. And coming up, we hear more of your comments on the guide dog and taxi refusal story that we did last week. Yes, more of you getting in touch to share your stories of experiencing refusals getting into a taxi because you have a guide dog. That coming up this hour. Also, we're going to be heading to the northeast of England with Danielle Colcombe, our community facilitator. She's telling us all about the event, the ICANN Awards, run by the charity Galloways. We'll find out about that. We'll also be learning about VI tennis. Yes, visually impaired people can play tennis, believe it or not. If you want to find out more about that, then we've got a special report coming up for you. And our Society of the Week is back once again. All that coming up this hour.
The Weekly Connect. On RNIB Connect Radio.
Yes, welcome along to it. Good to have your company. I am here with you for the next hour. And we're going to kick things off with your comments this hour. Lots of you getting in touch following our story last week from Sean Dilly, who has been refused entry to a taxi almost 30 times because he has a guide dog. Now, you can listen to Sean's story on our podcast, the Weekly Connect podcast, which you can get on Audioboom or iTunes or anywhere you get a podcast, basically. It's a horrific story, and it's echoed by so many of you who've been getting in touch. Now, if you want to share your story, please continue to do so. This story should not stop being told, I think, and this is the very place that we want to be discussing it, right here on the Weekly Connect. Let's go to the phones and talk to some of you. Hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
I stay in a small town called Beeve in Ayrshire, and I use the taxis fairly regularly. The first time I phone, I always tell them I've got a guide dog, because it's only fair. Because I know under the law, taxi drivers, if they've got a certificate from a doctor registered with their council, if they're allergic to dogs, etc., they're allowed to refuse. Anyway, as everyone knows, legally they're obliged to take you, whether they like it or not. Anyway, the first time I used the service here, I sent the phone about guide dogs. He says, we don't take dogs. I said, but he's not just an ordinary dog, he's a service dog, he's a guide dog, he's my eyes. And I think if you check out, you'll find it's a law you need to take them. So she said she would call me back in a few minutes, which she did do, and apologised and said, they'll pick me up with the dog, no problem. So I think it's a lot to do with ignorance and they don't know. Anyway, never had that experience again. That was one and only time. The big town I came from, East Kilbride, no problem there at all. So, anyway, I hope this helps, and thanks for doing this too. Take care.
Well, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate that. It's been really interesting hearing your comments over the course of this week. Let's go to the phones again. Our next caller here doesn't want to be named, but you have also experienced this issue of being refused entry to a taxi because of your guide dog, even up until fairly recently.
Yes, I've been in bother with taxi drivers twice in the last 6 or 7 weeks up at Glasgow, Sucky Hall Street. Called for a taxi, told them very, very clearly that I'd got a German Shepherd guide dog. When they arrived, the first time the car pulled up, the guy's talking out the window, you know. And I said to him, is it an estate car or a hatchback? Oh, it's a saloon scooter. Well, I'd found the door handle by this time, and I had the door half open. And he says, you won't get in here with that dog. I says, I won't I? But by this time, I got one leg in, and I called Zed in. Got him settled, got the other leg in, shut the door. And he says, you'll not get in here. I says, I'm in, my man. Anyway, I said, he said to me, he says, is that dog casting? I says, I've never known a German Shepherd that didn't cast. He says, what about my other customers? I said, well, I'm your customer at the moment. And he chuntered on. So I did lose my temper a wee bit. I'll admit that. And I did swear at him. And he asked me who I was swearing at. And I said, you. I said, you've got to take guide dogs. It's a law. He says, I don't have to take guide dogs. He says, this is a car, he says, oh, it'll cost me £5 to get it valeted after for a £2.80 fare. I says, well, mate, if you'd shut your mouth, I'd give you a fiver and ask for no change. I don't want your money. I says, oh, fair enough. I said, I won't pay then. Before this, I'd asked him, just after that statement about Hoover and the car, and he didn't want to take us. I said, well, give us your name and number, and we'll sort this out. And he says, no, no. And anyway, he went on about the £5, and he wouldn't take any money. And I says, okay, fair enough. I says, I'll not pay you. So he says, I'll take you to the police station. I says, great, carry on, my son. I'll get your name and bloody number there. So anyway, he took off at that point in a really stinking mood. So I was in a stinking mood as well. And when we got to the central station, Gordon Street, the bugger charged me £3.20. So I got a tenner out, gave him it, and he gave me the change. I made sure I got every penny, I counted it, got out the car and thanked him and left him. That was one. And then another time I got a, and he was crapping himself in the car and said that he couldn't get him in and that, but by this time it was too late. I was in the front seat and got the dog sitting. And he took me, but he was really, you know, crapping it all the way to the station. And he couldn't get me out quick enough. And I've had other instances in the past. Not many, but not. A lot of them are not keen, but the black taxi drivers are okay. The private companies, that's the one I've had the problems with.
Okay, well, thank you for your comment. Really appreciate you getting in touch with us, one of our listeners there who didn't want to be named, but we really appreciate you coming on. Okay, well, listen, keep your calls coming in on this, and also keep your messages coming in to us. The email address to contact us is theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Time now for our Society of the Week.
TAFN is effectively a member-led UK charity whose mission is to allow blind and visually impaired people to communicate with each other using a chat system, as well as all the other backup stuff you'd expect to find on the website, such as training materials, etc. The idea behind that is to help cut down the isolation felt by many blind and VI people. A lot of these people are on their own in their own homes, or maybe don't have access to speak to many people as friends, and find the fact that they can talk to somebody who's in the same boat as they are stimulating and rewarding. I got involved in 2009 basically because I was told about the charity from another member who I met at the time, and I thought, right, okay, I'll give it a go and see what it's like. I really wasn't sure at the time, but I took to it like a duck to water. I found it very interesting that I could speak to all these other people in real-time audio, and that they all knew where I was coming from, that everything about their life was in some way fringed or tempered by the fact that they were visually impaired. I have no sight at all now. I used to have sight. My sight when I was younger was quite good. I had no problem reading books or walking about or anything like that. But nowadays, I have no sight whatsoever. People that have RP, which is a degenerative condition, has given me an outlet to talk to other people about the same sort of problems that I have. Not just talking about the same sort of problems. We don't sit and moan at each other. But because everybody on the site has a visual impairment, that frames the way in which we look at the world and dictates to a certain degree how much freedom we have in that world and how we have to fight and push for certain things and how we have to maybe adapt our behavior in other ways to enjoy things that sighted people do. And therefore, it's been a great help to me because it's allowed me to take part in this charity. It's given me some focus, and because I contribute to the charity through a tech support role, it also means that I'm in touch with the members on a daily basis, helping them out, and that's a very rewarding experience.
Hi, my name's Carl McGee. I'm from County Durham. I'm totally blind. I've been a member for maybe 5 or 6 years. I've just recently joined the Finance and Publicity Committee, and I've started doing radio shows on our online radio station. But I've been a member before that for a long time. And TAFN, obviously the Accessible Friends Network, gives me the opportunity to speak with other people who either have sight loss or have no sight at all, and take part in a lot of games and quizzes, and just be sociable really from your own home, knowing that it's comfortable because you don't have to actually go out your house to take part in all these things, you know. So you can just stay in your own environment and where you feel most comfortable. You know that you've got TFN, the palm of your hand sort of thing, is really, really, really good, and it's something that I really like. Because the good thing is that TFN is like not just UK-wide, it's worldwide. We have blind and visually impaired people that have joined from America and Australia, New Zealand, Holland, you know, a lot of different countries. It's like a chat server. We use something called Team Talk, which is a server that you download, and as long as you've got a headset and a microphone, the microphone's attached to the headset, and I can hear people coming through my headset, and I can talk back to them using the control key on your computer. We take part in events and games that take place on the Team Talk server, and we also play music, and we have like a built-in music player. And again, that's really, really good, because you get to share your own sort of taste in music with everybody, you know. I like DJing, and I like interviews and chatting on radio and stuff. Well, I found out about TFN having its own licensed radio station, and I just decided that I wanted to join that, and never really looked back since. I do like about 2 or 3 shows a week, and the good thing is that everybody that does a show on there is either visually impaired or totally blind. They do it from the comfort of their own home. We've downloaded a piece of software, and we get like a license, which TFN kindly provide, and that's how we basically connect to a server and do our show that way. And people not only listen, but get in touch via email from all over the world. That's what makes TAFN Radio unique. I've gained a lot of friends and a girlfriend through TAFN as well, and that's really, really encouraging. And obviously doing the shows and stuff, that's gained me like confidence speaking on air and working the software, and that's built up my computer skills, and it's good, it's really good.
Go to the TAFN website, which is tafn.org.uk. On that site, there's a very simple sign-up form, which has been specially written for people who are visually impaired, so their screen reader will cope with it very well. Simply fill that out and press the send button. At that point, somebody from the organisation will get back to them, either by email or phone or whatever their preferred medium is, and talk them through what to do. The main reason they would probably join, though, is because they wanted to use the chat system, which is called Team Talk, to talk to other members and meet people and broaden their horizons and widen their circle of friends. You need either a PC, an Android device, or an iDevice. You can use any 3 of those, and each will work equally well. On the tech support side, what I basically do is this. If people have had difficulty after signing up, and are finding it hard to get on the website, or are finding it hard to configure Team Talk, I will at that point step in and help them, either through a telephone conversation and sort them through the various dialogues and things they need to traverse to get to where they want to be. Most people actually handle it absolutely fine, but there are some people who are slightly technophobic, and those people need that sort of assistance. We have TAFN Radio. I mean, I think it's a standout example of how the playing field can be leveled if you have the right equipment and the right accessible way of doing something. If people want to try it, don't be frightened of giving it a go. Go to the website, hit the contactless link, and even if you're not technologically very adroit, just fill out that little form and send it, or get someone to help you do it in the first instance if you need to, although I don't think you would. And we can have a talk to you, and we can show you how it works. We can get you on talking to other people, and from there the rest will flow fairly naturally.
And And if you would like to nominate a Society of the Week, then please do. You can get in touch by emailing theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Now, the Weekly Connect this week goes to the North East for a special report from Danielle Colcombe, who is our community facilitator at RNIB Connect. She tells us about her recent trip to the ICANN Awards in the North East, supported by the charity Galloway's.
My name's Danielle Colcombe and I work for RNIB as a community facilitator. I recently attended the ICANN Awards to celebrate the wonderful achievements of the Lancashire-based Blind Society Galloway's. It was Friday night and I was really excited and nervous, and I put on my best party frock and heels, grabbed my recording equipment and jumped on a train to Leyland in Lancashire for the prestigious event. Now, it's estimated that over 163,000 people across the northwest of England are living with sight loss, and local blind societies like Galloway's see daily examples of people living with loss overcoming life's achievements with courage and determination. The awards were created to celebrate what can be achieved by blind and partially sighted people of all ages when they are given the right opportunities, encouragement and support. As I approached the very lovely Wellington Park Hotel, I became a bit giddy at the prospect of our RNIB nominated volunteers potentially winning their respective categories. As we enter, we are welcomed with a glass of bubbly by a very helpful host from Galloway's. There was a definite buzz in the room as people from across the sector network and mingle, and we hear whispers of, "I wonder who'll win," and "Who's that Kevin guy?" Curious myself, I did a bit of research, only to find that Kevin Fitzpatrick is a BBC political correspondent and the guest VIP speaker of the evening. Can you imagine my nerves when I checked the seating plan to find he's sitting right next to me?
Well, I was asked to come along, and when I read some of the background of some of the nominees, some of the things that people have kind of achieved and some of the things that people have done to get nominated to be part of this award, it was really inspiring. I'm absolutely pleased to be able to come along and tell people a bit about my career, but also I guess reflect on my thoughts on what everybody here is involved in and how they're doing incredible things.
Well, he was very nice, wasn't he? So after that little warm-up and a glass of bubbly, I felt ready to tackle the bigwigs of the evening. So I confidently approached Galloway's CEO, Stuart Clayton, to ask him to say a few words about the importance of the awards.
Well, these awards have morphed really over the last couple of years. When we first did it, we decided we wanted to do something to celebrate the wonderful people, volunteers, visually impaired people around our patch, Lancashire and Sefton. We had such a successful event and the feedback was amazing. It was always going to be a one-off event, but we got such incredible feedback that we decided to do it again. And we also had a lot of contact from other organisations saying, actually, why don't you extend the boundaries? So tonight's about celebrating volunteers, colleagues who work in the sight loss sector, and visually, most important of all, visually impaired people.
So you mentioned the sector and the awards have been repeated because of last year's success. So why isn't a ceremony like this important to Lancashire and the wider sort of region of the North West?
Well, I think it is. We don't often... We've got a multitude of agencies and organisations out there. We don't often all come together. We don't often celebrate the generic successes of those people who are working in sight loss, those volunteers who are giving their time up for free in sight loss, and those people that we work with. And my goodness, we work with some incredibly inspirational people. And it's great to say, you know, thank you, it's been a pleasure working with you. But to have a night like this where people can be recognised for their achievements, you know, it's just fantastic. And we heard from Nia earlier on, who's one of my sight loss advisor colleagues working up in Morecambe. Nia's registered severely sight impaired. She's full-time job. She is a fantastic role model for people out there about what they can achieve. So tonight's about what people can achieve and the difference that's made out there.
And you're right, I've only been here 10 minutes and I've already met some really inspiring people, including Mia. So what do you think it means to the VI community to have these awards?
You probably need to speak to the VI community, to be honest. I just think it's something that's uplifting. It recognises their achievements, no matter how small or great they are, and the journeys that people travel. The nominations that we received, you know, over 100, were... I was just saying to a guest earlier on that it was so difficult to get down to 3 for each category. Mm. There's so many people achieving out there. I think the visually impaired community have embraced it, the fact that we want to do something positive and celebrate successes. But really, that's a question for the visually impaired people in this room today.
So you mentioned working in partnership with local agencies and national charities as well, and a lot of them are here tonight. So why is that important for Galloway's and for the sector generally to come together to work more closely with one another?
It makes absolute sense. People that come to you for help don't come for a brand. They come for help. It's critical that we get a package of support for somebody to enable somebody to realise their aspirations, to get back to living independently, etc., by working together, working collaboratively, working collectively, not being precious about brands. This is about, you know, we talk a lot in the sector about, you know, putting people at the heart of everything that we do. Well, we can't do that if we work independently of one another. And today is an opportunity. You see just behind me that we've got a banner up for the South Lake Society. This, when we rang them and said, well, you're coming along for the day, would you like to bring some information to promote what you do? Really? Can we do? I thought this was your. Well, no. This is just a celebration event, and it's critical that we all work together. It's not optional. It's absolutely a necessity.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, here as a representative of RNIB, I know how crucial it is that we work co-productively, and I'm particularly a fan of celebrating the work that volunteers contribute to the sector, and I know there's a specific award for that tonight, of which one of my volunteers is nominated, so we'll see how that goes. But what value do volunteers specifically add to Galloway's and the sector?
Oh, Galloway's, we would probably have to cut more than a third of our activities if we didn't have our volunteers. Volunteers work with us through our finance department, through reception, through our talking newspaper, through our outdoor pursuits programme, through our volunteers at our idea store up in Morecambe. They're a part of our DNA. They allow us to do more for people out there. In terms of the sector, you know, we are not an untypical local society. We're not an untypical sight loss organisation. Most of the local organisations are reliant on volunteers to make sure that we can make a difference out there. The national sector is I think waking up to that a little bit more perhaps, and utilising volunteers. I think it's a case of making sure that we are collaborative in the way that we do that, so we don't step on each other's toes, and that we work together to make sure that we don't have wasteful competition.
Yeah, great way of putting it. Pool our resources.
Absolutely.
Thanks for speaking with me. I'm pleased to be here, so thank you for inviting me, and thank you for hosting the awards, because I think it's really important that we do celebrate the work of the sector, so thank you.
Pleased you've been able to come.
After devouring a wonderful three-course dinner and listening to some wonderful guest speakers, including Kevin's hilarious whistle-stop tour of his journalism career, it's time for the awards. One member of RNIB staff and 3 volunteers were successfully shortlisted for the awards, but would they go on to win? Nominations were received from 117 people across 10 categories. The breadth of the challenges faced by those nominated was wide, as the geographical area they represented. Nominations spread from Barrow in the north, Liverpool in the south, from Southport in the west to Oldham in the east. Before we get on with the results of the awards, I caught up with the opening speaker, who many people commented on because of her inspirational story. So I'm joined by Nia, who is a sight loss advisor with Galloway's, and Nia has just done a fantastic opening speech for the award. So do you just want to tell me a bit about yourself and your job role and why you're here?
So I'm a sight loss advisor for Galloway's. So my role really is to be there when we're needed, really. You know what it's like in the hospital? You're told that you have a sight loss condition and you just don't know where to start, do you? It's just a whole different world. So we're there really to be that helping hand through their sight loss journey, really. I'm visually impaired as well. I'm registered as severely sight impaired. So I feel like I can, you know, within my role, you know, we know all know how frustrating it is not being able to see the newspaper or see your iPad very well and things like that. So we're there really to just provide that support where we need to, really. Yeah.
And you mentioned you're visually impaired yourself, yeah. and I can relate to the experiences you were talking about in your opening speech, because I'm sight impaired myself, so
right.
So even just getting here today, you know, the planning of the journey and everything that's involved.
Planning the bus routes, the train journeys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So is it that element of lived experience that really helps you within your role?
I think so, really, because I'm able to relate to, you know, I know what it's like not being able to recognise people and how that, you know, in uni I said in my speech, not being able to say I've made a friend one day and they might be sitting on a table with a space next to them, but I've not seen them and I just go sit wherever I can see it, mm-hmm. the next space. And I think that's, you know, them kind of things, them social situations. And then when you're out and about in uni, say in a nightclub, I have been left on my own on a dance floor and trying to find that exit, you know, where to go. It's all these kind of experiences. But the most thing I find is when I'm speaking to people, is that frustration. Because people who lose their sight maybe later in life with macular degeneration, they're used to picking up a newspaper and just skimming through it. So it's like managing expectations and saying, this is a magnifier, it's really good. But it might take you a bit longer to read that newspaper, or you might need a brighter light, or, you know, things like that. So just kind of going through things like that. But that ability to relate to people, I think, does help a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you talked a lot about peer support and how that's useful within the work that you do. So do you think that is the way forward for support? And
Definitely. I think so. Like, I remember once I organised a trip to the Apple shop in the Trafford Centre in Manchester. That was for tech support. And the workshop was fantastic, but the best thing was, on the way there and the way back, we had this group of visually impaired people who were had an interest in technology. But the best thing was, they were like, "Oh, have you tried this with VoiceOver? Have you tried that, or have you tried this with your tins? Have you tried that?" And that's just through natural conversation, and knowing that you're not on your own, and that all these little things, like not being able to see the bus as it's coming towards you, you're not on your own experiencing that. And I think that is really, really powerful and can make a massive difference.
It's very, very powerful, and I know it certainly helped me a lot through my experiences.
It helped me in school, just that, like as I said in the speech, just because in secondary school I was very much one of my own, segregated. Then I had a one-to-one with me, a lady called Stephanie, who was fantastic, but she was about 20 years older than me, and none of my peers wanted to come and talk to me, because I had this lady in a flowery skirt who was absolutely lovely. I loved her, but no one felt that they could approach me because I had this lady with me all the time. It's very isolating. So that peer support, I remember speaking to people who had experienced the same things as me, and I was like, oh, it just brings you out yourself, doesn't it?
It's so glad you're not alone, aren't you?
Yeah, especially, you know, in mainstream, you are on your own, kind of. Yeah. And you kind of bundle together with a lot of other groups of people that maybe you wouldn't necessarily have spent your time with, or, you know, you don't necessarily click with. It's more through your abilities than your personality and things like that. So, peer support is definitely, and it's something that Galloway's is really passionate about as well. So that's really good.
It's great that Galloway's are hosting this award show.
Yeah,
so what do you think, what does this mean to the sector, to the sight loss community?
I think, obviously, it's covered by the newspapers as well. So raising awareness of sight loss, the fantastic services that Galloway's provide, but also the fantastic work that has been delivered within the community, you know, the eye health professionals, just raising awareness of sight loss and the challenges and boundaries that come with it, but also demonstrating that maybe you don't always know if someone's visually impaired, it is an invisible disability, and not judging a book by its cover, looking at their abilities rather than their disability.
Oh, great. That summarises really fantastically why we're here tonight.
Yeah.
Are there any awards to look out for, anything you're excited for?
I think the Sports Award and the Eye Health Award or Organisation Award, looking at fantastic work that the colleagues are doing in the sight loss sector. I'm looking forward to that bit, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, we'll get on with the night and we'll look forward
definitely.
To the awards.
Thank you
Good to speak
much.
To you.
Thank you.
Bye. So after what was a suspenseful and inspirational series of announcements and speeches, I managed to grab a couple of the elated winners for comment whilst clutching at their sparkly award plaque. First up, I spoke to Lynn Renison, who founded the peer support group Sightseekers and volunteers for R&IB as well as Galloway's. So congratulations, Lynn.
Thank you,
Danielle. You've just won the Influence Award. How do you feel?
Well, I still feel a little bit overwhelmed, really, because I don't really think I'm doing anything, but obviously...
What exactly was the nomination for?
I think the nomination was for Education and Influence.
And is that to do with your work with Sightseekers?
Yes, I think it's to do with my work... Well, I'm sure it's to do with my work with Sightseekers, but I don't think it really just begins and ends with Sightseekers. I think it's hopefully the passion that I show for anybody who's VI, no matter what age, what sex, whatever. It's being VI that I have the passion for.
Just to give a little bit of context, the group Sightseekers is something that you set up in Chorley, wasn't it, to support people in the community after a Living With Sight Loss course?
That's right.
So was it that you found there wasn't much else available, so you just decided to go ahead and sort your own peer support?
I think the main thing is you find that when people come together in sort of little groups like that, especially on the Living With Sight Loss course, you find that people get really excited about wanting to stay in touch with each other, because sometimes with your sight loss and your sight loss journey, you've been isolated in the house for so long, or you've just put yourself in a really bad place. And I think when it comes to the peer support group, people get really excited about it, and they want to meet up. They need to meet up because it enriches your life so much.
And it clearly has done quite a lot for yourself, if you don't mind me saying as well.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, like I've said before, Sightseekers has given me a reason to exist day by day, to have a passion and do things for my Sightseeker family.
Well, many, many congratulations on winning the award. I think it's about time that peer support was widely recognised, and you certainly are an inspiration, and you have influenced a lot of people, so thank you for...
Thank you, Danielle. Yeah. I'm a winner!
Yay! Another winner on the night was Douglas McCleary, who won the Young Person of the Year award. I think Douglas was a bit shy. So I'm with Douglas at the moment, who's just won our Young Person's Award. So, hi, Douglas.
Hi.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you want to tell me a bit about what it is you do?
Well, I like drawing old buildings and stuff.
So what have you been nominated for tonight?
The Young Person's Award.
And what kind of things are you involved in?
Is it drawing and making short films?
Tell me about your short films.
Well, when I was going up to secondary school, Jan Quinn, who used to be in Sighted by South Lakes, helped make a film for the secondary school staff so then they could find out about me without having to look through lots of paperwork.
Okay, do you really enjoy that, making films?
Yeah, it was good.
Good experience?
Yeah.
So can you tell me a bit about your visual impairment?
I've got ocular albinism, nystagmus, astigmatism, no depth of vision. I think that might be about it.
So quite a range of conditions there. What has it meant to you to be nominated for this award?
It's really meant a lot.
And then winning?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you're a true inspiration to young people out there.
Thanks.
What would you say to anyone who's young or with a visual impairment who may be looking to get out there and make a difference?
A visual impairment doesn't stop you doing what you want to do.
That's great advice.
Thanks.
Well, congratulations and thank you again.
Thank you.
Another winner I spoke to on the night was Maria Pulkowski, an eye clinic liaison officer working with R&IB. So I'm with Maria. Congratulations, Maria. You've just won the Eye Health Professional Award.
Yeah,
well done.
I was very emotional about it. It was very... I feel very proud to get the award.
Do you want to tell me a bit about the work that you do?
I work in the eye clinic at St Helens as an eye clinic liaison officer. And I see about 100 people a month. And last year I saw about 1,200 people. not last month, last year, sorry. Do apologise, I don't think I could manage that. And I'm so passionate about my job because I'd like to help people, sight loss prevention, people who are going through sight loss, making sure that they get the right help. So I'm the gateway to all the services.
Someone described you as a bit of a daredevil, so do you want to tell me what that means, please?
Well, I like a challenge every single year, so I've done wing walking, done paragliding, whitewater rafting, 100k walks, skydiving. I go skiing every year. I've just been on the tall ships for a week, and I've climbed the mast up to the crow's nest, and many more. So if anybody's got any ideas out there, send them to me, because I'd love some challenge.
So you truly are an inspiration then. I feel tired just listening to that range of activities yeah. you're doing. So what does it mean to you to win the award tonight?
I feel overwhelmed. I just think that I feel it's an achievement.
And what does it mean for the sector to have award ceremonies like this to celebrate the work that you do?
I think it's a fantastic award ceremony, and I think, you know, if people are doing such a good job, get nominations in for the next one.
Next one. So we'll see you next year then. Maybe you'll be presenting an award then.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah. I'd love to do that.
Well, congratulations again. Good luck for all your future work.
Okay, thank you.
I was also really pleased to get a few minutes with another winner. This time it was RNIB volunteer and Inspirational Achievement Award winner, Mark Rogerson. So I'm joined by Mark. Congratulations, you've just won an award.
Yeah, unbelievable. There were so many good nominations against me, but I'm really, really shocked. I don't even know what to say. It's just one of those things. I'm not rocking speechless, but I am tonight.
Inspirational Achievement, that was the award that you were put forward for. So, and the judges tell us that there wasn't even a category for that, but yours and the other nominations were just so outstanding they couldn't not put you through.
Yeah, again, it's all a bit weird. I don't class myself as an inspiration as such. I just do what I can to help people, and I get all my enjoyment out of volunteering and raising money, so this is just like the icing on the cake, really, for me. So
you sound very humble, so I won't embarrass you too much. I just want to know, what do the awards mean to the sector and to yourself personally?
Yeah, I mean, it's as I said before, it's such a great event to celebrate everything that the people living with sight loss are going out there and doing, and listening to everybody's story tonight, and there's so many inspirational people out there, and as it happens, I've turned out to be the award winner for the inspiration. But it just means an awful lot to me, that the fact that people recognise what I'm doing, even though I don't really want people to recognise what I'm doing. It's just one of them things, I'm glad it's happened, and I just, like I say, I just really am speechless. I just cannot think, you know, with all of the amazing stories out there, why I've been picked, but I have been picked. So I'm just going to carry on doing what I'm doing and get my enjoyment out of it that way.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? And you do seem to get a lot of pleasure out of what you do, so congratulations again.
Thank you very much. Yep. Yeah.
Of course, award ceremonies often couldn't happen without their sponsors. So I spoke with the Eric Wright Group, who managed to make this evening happen. They're huge supporters of Galloway's. So I'm with the Eric Wright Group, is that correct?
Correct,
You guys have sponsored this evening's awards. Do you want to just introduce yourselves and tell me a bit about what you do?
I'm Eric Wright, and we're a big construction company based in the Northwest. A whole range of construction operations. We formed a charitable, I formed a charitable trust in 1980. And now my wife and my colleague Michael have taken over the trust, and the trust owns the company. So their job is to give money away to charities, principally in the Northwest, that require support. And hence, Galloway's have been coming to our outdoor centre in the Lake District for about 9-10 years now. And so we appreciate what they do. It's just amazing that contribution to partially sighted people or blind people. And Alison has got a particularly close association with them, and we sponsored this 18 months ago, and we want to be part of it. So it's just incredible, their contribution to society, isn't it?
Yes.
So Alison, you're the woman with the purse strings, is that right?
Indeed, yes. So I am a trustee of the Eric Wright Charitable Trust, and we support Galloway's as much as we can do in financially, so that they can, last year they actually had four young people qualify in the low vision unit, and we are very proud of that, and we love that unit, and it helps an awful lot of people get through terrible times in their lives. So we're very proud to be part of the Galloway's family, and we hope to stay with them for many years to come.
I think the fact that you're here and able to offer that support is incredible, and I agree, offering support to organisations like Galloway's is really important. So without you, these awards wouldn't have been able to take place. So what do you feel has been the highlight of this evening, and why do you think the awards are important for the sector?
Well, I think that all the nominees for the awards, every one of them is a winner, and it just inspires other people who aren't partially sighted or blind, it inspires them to see what can be done in their lives. The young people that have gone through, traumas in their lives, and they've got through it so wonderfully. I mean, they're so beautiful speakers, and they've achieved things.
It's that fellowship between people with similar problems, and how they've tackled those problems encourages each of them.
Yeah.
And if we can be a small part of that, we just think it's terrific.
I think with blindness, as people, if they're young and they're blind and they're growing up, they are very isolated. And like the young lady who was speaking tonight, she didn't know anyone that had impaired vision. So they've gone through most of their young lives never meeting anyone. So the fact that there are centres where there are people with the same disability, that does create friendships. They can ring each other up and say if they're really fed up with the world or if there's something fun happening, and I think that's very important. Social, interactive activities and things are very, very important, and that's what we try to achieve with our charity. So that's
brilliant. Thank you for your time.
Okay.
The ICANN Awards was a truly moving evening. My congratulations go to the entire army of nominees, and my thanks go to Galloway's for hosting such a fun-filled evening. I was so caught up in the enthusiasm of the event that I ended up missing my train home.
Well, there you go. It must be a good night when you miss your train home, that's what I think. That was Danielle Colcombe there, reporting from the northeast of England, and the charity Galloway's. Thanks to everyone involved in that special report. You can catch it again on our website and on the podcast, which you can find on Audioboom and on iTunes. The website address, of course, if you want to find any of our content, is www.rnibconnectradio.org.uk. Now, ever fancied getting into tennis? Well, Lynn Morgan in our Cardiff studio went along to an event in Swansea, which was all about helping blind and partially sighted people play the game.
Sean Donovan from Swansea has been playing tennis for just over 2 years. During a quick break from his training, I asked Sean what made him take up the game.
I've always loved sport, and a couple of years ago I was looking for a sport that could help me become more physically active, and I saw there was VI tennis sessions happening here in Swansea in the RNIB newsletter, so I decided to come down and take part. My sight loss was through a brain tumour I had when I was young, and damaged my optic nerves while it was growing in the location it was in my brain, and as a result the surgeons had to damage and cut away a little bit of the optic nerve, which meant I had the sight loss, and now I can't see a lot of things to my left hand side of my eyes, so unless you're standing either on my right or directly in front of me, I won't be able to see you. So that's basically been my sight loss since I was 8 years old.
There's something in the ball so that you can hear it. So does that become really attuned to the sound in that ball?
Yes, it can be, especially as these balls don't bounce like the regular tennis balls. It, very often you can almost pick up whether or not the bounce will be true or whether there'll be a slight difference in the direction it takes as it approaches you. Now, I mainly just played tennis for leisure before, not sort of a serious competitive level. I just did it in any spare time or for leisure activities. Like I said, I saw this, and I suppose I'd be missing a little bit in my life to get involved in sport on a competitive level. I was involved with the VI football team, and at one point I had to stop because of I had to go off to college and study there, so I was looking for something else then, and VI tennis came along. The sessions are once a week, but I'm now starting an extra session in a pan-disability tennis format, so I'll be playing not just people who are visually impaired, but who have other disabilities as well. So I'm doing 2 weeks now, and I'm hoping to maybe start three times a week to step up in preparation for this upcoming competition. It's up in Sutton in South London, and it will be my first competition. It's part of the regional competitions they do throughout the UK, but each competitor gets given a category that they can play in. They can choose to play in other categories, but they got to play to their category rule while the other player plays to theirs. But I'll be in the B4 category, which at the moment has one other player in there. So I'll just go along and I'll try my best. You know, it's going to be a heck of an experience, but one day I hope to compete in the nationals, and if that goes well, to hopefully get onto one of the international competitions.
You mentioned that there was somebody else in your B4 category, so would they have sort of similar sight loss?
Yes, you'll have the same sort of impairment. We all have to get our doctors to basically state in a letter what kind of sight loss we have, and we send that away to the British Blind Sport, and they give us a classification of what we'll be in, and then we send that off to the Tennis Foundation to enter into the tournament.
You mentioned pan disability, Sean. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
The pan disability sessions basically mean that there are people who attend there who have a variety of disabilities, not just VI. So there's wheelchair tennis players, players with learning disabilities. And yeah, that's it. It's anybody who has any form of disability. There's also deaf players as well. So it's you know, anybody who has a disability is welcome to come along and participate.
Presumably, then, people in wheelchairs only play against people with wheelchairs, or do you all mix in?
Oh no, we can all mix in. Yeah, I played somebody in a wheelchair the other day, and she's very good, and you know, she's still in the early stages of entering the sport. So it's just a case of I'm comfortable with the level she's playing at, and if she doesn't feel comfortable with what I'm doing, then she, you know, she asked me just to maybe go a bit slower, maybe hit the shots a little shorter so she can access them easier. So it's no problem, like, we're all learning. So it's all one step at a time.
Sean Donovan. Sean's coach is Sam Munson, a lead disability coach in Wales, and I asked Sam how he got involved in VI tennis.
Bit of a strange one. I was the only coach in the club that was willing to get involved with any form of disability sport. A lot of other coaches have said it's out of their comfort zone, things like that. So I sort of took it on. As I've carried on, I've adapted, I've learnt, and I'm a lot more confident now in coaching disability tennis.
How long have these sessions been happening in Swansea?
They've probably been going on now for about 18 months to 2 years, on and off. When we started, we had quite a big following, quite a big turnout. And because you've got a slight lack of coaches and things like that, when you've got big numbers, you need more coaches to support. So with a lack of coaches, you've then got players start to drop off because you can't give each player the support they need. So numbers drop, and then numbers pick up, and then numbers drop again. And it's really the ones that keep coming and the ones that have a more continuous form of training are the ones that will play to a higher level, like Sean now, who's off to, say, Sutton to play in his first tournament. But he's been coming for the best part of 18 months, nearly for the full whack, whereas others who have sort of dropped off, and they could have been playing in competition, they could have been representing the region, the county, even on a national level. But now, due to, say, lack of coaches that want to be involved and coaches that struggle to comprehend disability sport, it's now stopping players that maybe want to keep active from taking part in sport, which is a little bit of a sad state for the world of not just tennis, but disability sport in general.
So what has helped to keep motivating you to continue training with people who are disabled?
It's probably more the, say, job satisfaction rather than financial, because at the end of the day, for them, it's a sense of achievement. And when it comes to the realms of disability, not just VI, but with LD, with wheelchair players, it gives them more of a sense of something they've achieved on their own, and it gives them more of a sense of place, really, as opposed to someone who needs continuous support and things like that. They're doing things for themselves, and then they get a sense of achievement.
So you've been with Sean more or less from the beginning then?
Pretty much from the beginning, when he's been coming to the sessions, and he's coming in leaps and bounds, really, quite strong on court.
So will you go with him to Sutton then, or will you just sort of keep an eye on his progress?
I'm hoping to. For me, it all depends really on when the tournament is, say, because I've got bills to pay as well. I've got to think about things like loss of earnings, but hopefully I get a chance to go up, because it'd be my first experience of a player playing in a visually impaired competition. I've been to LD competitions where I've seen my autistic players achieve, but I haven't seen any visually impaired competitions at all. So it'll be an eye-opener for me and a chance for me to see what's happening nationwide. I think it's a big learning curve, because every player is different. But one of the biggest challenges we've got, I think, as a nation with disability sport, is getting people to understand that they can actually compete and they can play and they can exercise. If you say to someone who's visually impaired, "We can come and play tennis," and they sort of go, "What do you mean I can play tennis? I can't see the ball. I can't do this. I can't do that." You go, "Well, actually, you can. It's adapted. And a lot of the equipment's adapted for them. You've got raised lines, you've got, as you can probably hear, you've got a ball with a rattle in it so they can hear what they go, and we allow more bounces." But to explain that to every visually impaired player as a whole, it comes as a shock. They don't realise that it's there. So I think, along with most realms of disability sport, it's a lack of promotion from sports, from sports governing bodies, from even coaches and, say, venues. If people don't know the sessions are going on, then how can they take part in them? So as a nation, I think it's probably more vital that we let people know these sessions are going on, and that getting people on court. Once you get them on, as a coach, you adapt. You learn how to coach different people, let's say, with their individual issues, with their individual sort of abilities. You learn what to do. So I've got an open disability session. I've got two autistic players. One of them's in a chair. I've got a visually impaired player. And when they first step on court, you sort of go, "Oh, right, I've got to do this for them, that for the other, and this for these guys," which, again, can be quite tricky. But you learn to adapt your sessions. And for people to say, "Oh, well, you know, I can't really do that, it's not what I'm used to," say, "Just come down and try it." As soon as they get on court and they go, "Well, actually, maybe there is a chance I can play this," they can enjoy it, where they can get active, they can exercise, they can actually improve their fitness.
When I was watching you earlier, I heard you say, "Take three steps forward there, that'll take you into one place. Three steps back and you're on the line," sort of thing. So how do you talk them through a tennis court?
Movement around a court, say, is quite a big thing in tennis. You can't just stand still and hit a ball. So we have to walk players around the court, let them get their bearings. But it all depends on their category. We've got some players who are totally blind. They need a lot more support on a court to understand dimensions, movement, things like that. But we've got other players who have got quite a good range of sight, in which case they can see a lot more, they can make out the size of the court. They don't need quite as much support in that sense.
Are they expensive, the balls?
The balls that we use are from the Japanese Blind Tennis Association, so we've got to get them over from Japan, but they were kindly donated by Tennis Wales. So we work quite closely with Tennis Wales to promote disability sport, and they're very keen to supply equipment.
And why Japan?
The Japanese were the ones that came up with the concept of visually impaired tennis. Then they came up with adaptive equipment. So really it's all about the technology behind things, that they've been able to adapt a lot quicker than the rest of the world.
Tennis coach Sam Munson. If you want further information on VI Tennis, then visit the website rnib.org.uk/tennis guide.
Lynn Morgan in our Cardiff studio there. And that brings us almost to the end of this week's Weekly Connect. Just one final word, and it goes to Ken Reid, who is a former chair of RNIB Scotland, but is now doing all kinds of wonderful things these days, including cycling around the country to raise money for RNIB Talking Books and beyond. He spent some time with our reporter Sophia Asif at the recent UK Vision Strategy Conference to tell us his thoughts on the conference and the way forward. Here's our final thought.
A lot of able-bodied people fear sight loss more than any other form of disability. They don't understand sight loss, and that's why they fear it. And really, they should not be fearing us as blind and partially sighted people. They shouldn't be fearing our conditions. And they should really just be looking for ways to include us. And then they would find that it's a lot less frightening prospect. It's not a good prospect, but it's not as frightening as they might think it is. I have light and dark and shapes. I have fairly progressive, far progressed retinitis pigmentosa. Of the speakers that have been in the main session, 3 out of 4 of them had sight loss and 2 out of 3 had retinitis pigmentosa. Amongst the working age, it's not an unusual condition to come across. I'd just like people to really be more aware and alert to the whole need to include blind and partially sighted people in their lives, in what gets done. So we're coming at the whole environment on an even playing field that includes us, rather than having to be adapted and integrated as an afterthought. What we need are the same tools as everybody else needs, and they will work for us immediately out of the box. We don't need to have something that's made specially for us. We don't need to have something that is retrofitted to make it work. And all of that, it just puts us onto the same place. It excites me as a prospect. I think for the vast majority of products and services, we're still an awful long way away from delivering that. There are some notable exceptions, which many people will have come across. I think the iPhone led the way with that by putting VoiceOver into the Apple products right from the start, so everybody can use it, anybody can use it. Others have still got a lot of catching up to do in that respect. But the same would be true if you could get the same is needed for cookers and ovens and fridges and televisions and light switches and everything you need in your home and in your life should be accessible and working to give us in exactly the same position as the people who are sighted.
And that echoes, I think, what a lot of people out there are saying. That is the Weekly Connect for you for this week. Thank you for listening, as always. Remember, the podcast is always available. Tell us what you think of the show. You can email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. And remember, when it's Mondays at 1 o'clock, is the Weekly Connect. Thank you for listening.